The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and are we happy to have him, is one of the brightest academics that I know, Dr. Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute, one of the most prestigious in America. So welcome back, Dr. Levy.
Thank you very much, Alan. Always a pleasure to be with you.
So a poll out this week shows Americans remain divided over politics, the results of the 2020 election and the media. Yet they share core values of equality, liberty, and progress. The survey from the Siena College Research Institute, yours, polled more than 6,000 Americans across the country. The poll found that regardless of geographic location or where Americans fall on the political spectrum, a majority support voting rights and share concerns about partisanship and racial inequality. Has anybody got a tongue in their cheek somewhere?
Well, you know, let's take a step back. The initial impetus for this study was to try to address that concern right there. You know, hyperpartisanship is all that we hear about, all that we talk about. And obviously, there is tremendous evidence to support this destructive hyperpartisanship. So we set out to try to understand beneath that, do Americans share an underlying set of core values? And within that, if indeed we could find that they did, is there any hope that that sense of shared values could provide a pathway to either reconciliation or at least some level of compromise? And so that's what we set out to study. And indeed, we did find that people are partisan. In our poll of over 6,000 Americans, of those who voted, 51% voted for Joe Biden, 47% voted for Donald Trump. In fact, we asked them, do you think that much of the mainstream media is fake or not? And nearly half said yes. And we asked them, do you think that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump or not? And nearly a third said that that's what they believed. So indeed, we are deeply divided.
Okay, let's divide it all up and ask some of the questions that come to mind after a great survey research guy like yourself and people who work for you. Let's talk about immigration. What are you finding?
Well, immigration we asked about, and let me, you know, read the question that we asked.
Sure.
We asked, do you support or oppose providing a path to citizenship called amnesty by some for those that some call illegal aliens and others call undocumented immigrants? We tried to use the vocabulary of both the left and the right. There we found 63% support that, 37% are opposed. Now, we did see variation in different regions of the country. In fact, if you look simply at New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, 72% of people in those three states support this path to citizenship. You know, when you turn and you look at other areas of the country, the South, East, South, Central, the area that would include, say, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, there we see voters nearly evenly divided on that question. When we include Texas, 60-40, so still support, but less support for immigration, the pathway to citizenship, than we see in New York. So there are differences on those issues. A federal ban on assault weapons. There's one that, again, here in the greater New York area, 79% of voters in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut support that ban. 21% are opposed. But again, if you go to other areas of the country, the mountain region, the South, there you see, again, nearly evenly divided, 52 in support, 48 opposed. So we here in the Northeast, we here in the greater New York area, when it comes to these issues, are different than folks in other states. And on these issues, yes, indeed, we are divided. Take another one, you know, a highly contentious issue. Do you think in most cases abortion should be legal or illegal? Overall, we're divided on that question. When you look at the entire country, 36% think it should be illegal, 43% legal, 21% just simply can't say. So nearly evenly divided. But again, when you look at that here in the greater New York area, 52% legal, only 30% illegal. However, when you look at some of the other areas of the country, the upper Midwest, the deep South, there you see pluralities saying abortion should be illegal. So we are divided on those issues.
So I want to go into the concept of democracy. So in other words, from the people, you show, for example, on immigration and gun control, some very progressive thinking, not so much on abortion, which is sort of 50-50-ish, although still in favor of abortion. What does that tell us about our democracy? You're a political scientist, you know.
Well, again, and you know, we took a look at it, you know, this very large sample of over 6,000 people, and then we used a statistical technique called cluster analysis that I'm sure you're familiar with and probably some of your listeners are, where we simultaneously consider all these issues at the same time. And so we look at the answers that every single one of these 6,000 people gave us on immigration, guns, et cetera. And by doing that, we can put them in one of three clusters. They're either left of center, right of center, or centrist. What we found was even the folks who fell in this centrist group, which is, and these fell out roughly a third, but the folks in the center lean to the left. Their views are more similar to their friends on the left on things like immigration, federal ban on assault weapons, certainly on voting rights, than they are to the people on the right. So, you know, our survey would tend to say that we are, in effect, a center-left nation on these issues that I'm talking about.
Well, I'm confused. Not because you're not articulate, because you are, certainly, but in a democracy, from the people, democracy, we are finding that positions on gun control, for example, and immigration and even abortion don't match up with the policy that is adopted by places like state legislatures or the Congress. What do you make of that? Are we fooling ourselves thinking we live in a democracy?
Well, before I try to answer that really difficult question, I'll go even a step further with you. Because not only are you pointing that there may be majority support for things like, let's just take voting rights, which is dramatic support. In our survey, we asked, do you support or oppose passing federal legislation that would both protect voting rights and make it easier to vote? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that piece of legislation is dancing around Congress and is not moving anyplace.
Sure.
We found 84% support for that idea. 84%. There's no equivocation amongst Americans, but yet it's not passing federally.
Because the Republicans don't want it to pass. I mean, I hate to generalize, but it sounds that way to me. I mean, if you take something like the Voting Rights Act, the Republicans oppose, the Democrats are for.
Right now, I'd agree with that statement, and certainly dramatically high percentages of Americans say that they support that. In fact, they go further saying that's what it means to be an American.
Mm-hmm.
You add to that, when we ask them value statements, they support any number of value statements that we were taught from the moment we went to kindergarten. Things like the golden rule, treat others as you would have them, as you would like them to treat you, and a series of different value statements like that. Americans share these underlying values. And when we did additional interviews, they told us, well, we said, well, what's dividing us then? What's keeping us apart? Among the issues that they brought up, one of the things that they brought up was our political class. And these are Americans who say that they're Republicans, say that they're Democrats, say that they're independents from every age group, every state in the nation. You know, one of the things they returned to again and again was that their concern that our politicians are doing more to divide us than they are to bring us together. There was a sense that our politicians, we are a representative democracy, are not representing this sense of shared values that cuts across the entire country.
Yes, exactly. Let's go to the state of New York for a minute. I'm fascinated with this. I do a lot of my work on this subject. I know that there are other polls besides yours, but you keep your eye on them. What do your latest polls say about the coming governor's race? I read that Kathy Hochul, who is the lieutenant governor, is now the governor, is leading among potential contestants. Do you have any insights into that?
Well, the first insight I'd have is it's very, very, very. I'll give you three varies early. And, you know, we took a quick look in our most recent New York State poll of registered voters, and Kathy Hochul has a positive favorability rating. She has a tepid job approval. People are getting to know her.
I agree.
And when we initially pitted her against a field that included a number of candidates who are at least purported to be running for governor, she comes out on top. But at this point, she's the only declared candidate, and she has the word governor in front of her name, so she's in the lead. But it's a long way to go before we have a Democratic primary. We've got to see who ultimately does declare and what support tends to go their way, as well as the public will have months now of determining whether or not they feel confident in Governor Hochul's leadership. She's got to go through a state of the state, a budget process, and all that's going to take place in and amongst a campaign that will certainly heat up as we enter 2022.
I couldn't agree with you more. It will heat up. One of the ones I'm most interested in is Letitia James, the state attorney general, who has really worked very, very hard. Assuming she comes into this, will a lot more people know who she is than know now?
Well, certainly. I mean, she comes in, she is the sitting attorney general, and as you know as well or better than anybody, that's been a springboard to the governor's mansion for any number of recent governors here in the state of New York. And she will become progressively more known. She's more known right now in the greater New York City area than she is upstate. If indeed she jumps into the race, she appears right now to be the candidate closest to challenging Hochul, and that will be a dynamic and very, very interesting campaign if indeed it ends up being between the two of them. We, in our recent poll, we pitted Governor Hochul in a hypothetical Democratic primary against Attorney General James, and Governor Hochul comes out on top, but there's a lot of votes who say, I don't know. And actually, if you go down into the cross tabulations, you see that an awful lot of people say that they have a favorable opinion of both Hochul and James. Mm-hmm. So what's going to split them to one candidate or the other? That's the campaign that could very well become the centerpiece of New York politics next year.
So that leads to a very interesting question for me, maybe one that a superb pollster like yourself can answer. The top contestants for our top jobs, U.S. Senator or Governor, don't usually come from the Niagara Erie area, whereas they usually come from the five boroughs of New York or about there. And so one can only wonder whether or not that is going to play a role in the way this turns out.
Certainly, I think that'll play some role. Governor Hochul has been in public service for a long time. She has crisscrossed the state. Yes, she's from the Buffalo area, but she has spent a number of years serving all New Yorkers and working and befriending New Yorkers across the entire state. That said, New York City is the largest cache of votes, most especially in a Democratic primary. In our very, very early poll, Hochul and James were about even in New York City. So certainly if we were going to put on our political strategist hat, you would probably assume that James needs to, if she's going to run for governor and if she's going to challenge Hochul, she would need to win New York City, because you would expect that Hochul would certainly win upstate.
We're talking to Donald Levy of the Siena College Research Institute, and we are very grateful, by the way, Donald, for your being with us. I do want to ask you a little bit about the fact that Tish James is, of course, a woman, as is Hochul, but is also of color. Have you been able to pick anything up from your polls or from your inquiry as to whether that hurts or helps her?
Really not as yet. I think that we'll have to see as the campaign heats up, if indeed we end up with a campaign that is Governor Hochul against Attorney General James, to have two women, you know, running against one another would be something that we haven't seen, of course, in New York before. So we'd be looking at how men vote, how women vote. And certainly to have a woman of color, we would take a look at, you know, does the African-American vote, for example, does the Hispanic vote tend to go more favorably towards James? It's far too early to tell. But certainly that's something that I think pollsters like us, you know, and the campaigns will be looking at. I do want to return for just a second,
sure,
if I could, to our American Values study, because I'd like to pose to you and to your listeners the difficult thought process that this study points to. And, you know, the question, if indeed we are a hyper-partisan society that in some ways is getting stuck in the political mud against a backdrop of the shared values that people have, where do we go from here? And a couple of the ideas that came out of some of the interviews that we did were suggestions from citizens for things like, well, maybe we should have term limits. Maybe we should have campaign finance reform. Maybe we should do something that, you know, was a popular idea decades ago, that being national service. Maybe if we served with one another, whether it be not just in the military, but in organizations like AmeriCorps, the Peace Corps, VISTA, that maybe we would build alliances that could, you know, help us cut across some of these partisan divides. I mean, one comment that we made in our study, we asked, to what degree do you share this value, that no person is complete if they do not give of themselves in service to others? That was a statement that was valued, but was valued sort of at a lower level than many of the others. And many made critiques of us as a people, that we have a little bit too much concentration on me and not enough on we. And that's something that they hoped we could overcome if indeed we're going to continue to have this American experiment be successful.
You know, Don Levy, I do look at former Governor Cuomo with some interest in all of this. I know him well enough to know that if he has an opportunity to win the governorship again, he'll do it. And so therefore, I don't know what you're picking up. Some polling I've seen say that he's not well regarded. But in a six-person primary, anything could happen, right?
Anything could happen in a very large primary. And I think, you know, Governor Cuomo was, of course, the largest figure on the New York landscape for more than a decade. You know, in our most recent poll, interestingly, his favorability dipped below the favorability of former President Trump in a state that's 2-1 Democrat to Republicans. Now, I will note that former Governor Cuomo's favorability rating still was greater than the mayor of New York City, Mayor de Blasio. But when we did put Governor Cuomo in a hypothetical Democratic primary, he finished below Governor Hochul, but just slightly above Attorney General James. So there is still support for former Governor Cuomo. There are many New Yorkers who appreciate many of the things that his administration's accomplished. While majorities feel as though he did practice or commit sexual harassment, and feel as though he did the right thing to leave office, there continues to be a sizable group of New Yorkers who say at this point that they would support him if indeed he put his hat back in the ring.
You know, you said some things that I truly believe in, and I know you've tested for them in the past, but term limits, for example. As a political scientist, you're not supposed to be for term limits. You're supposed to be for people having election But I do believe that a lot of people want to see it because they think these people get into office and they find ways to stay there and to finance themselves with campaign contributions and everything else. What are you seeing?
Well, certainly we're seeing many Americans, when we have brought this to their attention, support term limits. There is a sense that a professional political class is not necessarily in keeping with the enhancement of these shared American values and with democracy. I mean, one thing that many people tell us is they'd like politicians to govern from the center and not from the extremes. They'd like politicians to be primarily concerned with what's best for the American people, not what is best for the small group of voters that they need to win primaries. So term limits are seen as a potential mechanism to keep politicians responsive to all voters, perhaps as opposed to just to their extremes. The other thing that Americans tell us, and you know whether or not it can come to pass, does not appear likely, is independent redistricting. That's something that Americans feel as though voters should pick their representatives. Representatives shouldn't pick their voters. But you and I know that gerrymandering is actively taking place in every state of the union, to whatever extent the laws of those states make it possible.
But it does seem so anti-American in terms of philosophy that the elected officials are picking their voters rather than the other way around. And yet, they don't seem to be picking up a lot of leverage with the people who are making those decisions.
Absolutely. The rank-and-file voter across America says, you know, we'd like you to represent us. I mean, just think about the simple arithmetic in a country where more and more the percentage of Americans who are not registered as either a Republican or a Democrat is in many states the single largest group. They are relegated to a situation where they only get to choose between the candidate chosen in the Democratic or Republican primary that to a large extent is chosen by the most ardent, or some might say the most activist members of the two parties. So the people on the furthest left and the people on the furthest right choose the two candidates, and the larger group of Americans in the great center, they have to choose. They have to choose one or the other, but there isn't a candidate that is chosen for them. So they feel as though term limits, independent redistricting, and maybe Americans would be open to other changes in how our representatives are chosen. Now, to try to get the political leadership who hold those offices to enact that sort of change is a challenge that I think you're going to have to make happen more so than me, because I don't know how to do it.
Well, that leads us to the next question, and that is polling itself. I'm a great believer. I look at the polls that you do, but polls have been seen by some to be off track, not to be right. I get a great deal out of them, but I'm wondering what the state of the profession is right now.
Exciting time to be a pollster. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before.
Yes.
Methodologically, we now include a variety of different methods in order to garner participation from Americans, because the old method of everybody had a landline, you called them at their landline, is antiquated. It's not the method we use. So now we're using combinations of cell phones, internet polling with a sprinkling of landline, merging those streams of data together in order to come up with a representative sample of New Yorkers. Now, you add to that the phenomenon that we saw in the last election, that being that the supporters of one national candidate, were fed a steady diet that said that people like you, people like me, were the enemies of the state, that we were somehow fake. And there was a measurable impact of participation amongst that group, that they simply didn't participate in polls at a differential rate. And so that's something that we're addressing. You know, we've been testing across both nationally and in New York, trying to ascertain how large is this group that we deem to be anti-establishment, that's defined by saying both that the media is fake and that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. And whereas in this national survey, we found about 26% met that description. In the state of New York, that's a little bit less. That's about 17-18%. But we feel as though that's a slight understatement of the size of that group. And so we're beginning to both seek to get folks like that to participate in our polls, and then we statistically adjust the answers of those that do. And, you know, what's called weighting, we have to weight them up a bit. So it's a time to be a pollster if you like challenges, and we certainly have challenges. At the same time, I think you're not alone in that many, many people, whether they're involved in commentary, journalism, or private citizens, still, they want to know. They want to know what other New Yorkers, what other Americans are saying, and we're still the best option. You know, we're certainly still a better option than listening to only your neighbor, only the people that, you socialize with, because we do speak to a far more representative group of citizens.
Well, I got to say, I could be on here for an hour with you, Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute. I got to tell you, it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to hear you once again. And believe me, we're going to be after you to come back and again and again. So we are out of time. Our guest has been Dr. Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute, home of the Siena Poll. Dr. Levy, thanks so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.